It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
I want a party. I want a samba.
Goodness from hauntedflower.com, hauntedflowerreviews.com, and indiemojo.com. And today with me, I have the guys from the Film Yap.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got Joe Shear and Christopher Lloyd.
Sorry, we're doing our creepy voices, because they got the haunted house going on here at WFYI today for all the kiddies.
It's very scary here. There are all these neon arrows on the floor and creepy things and candy in the lobby. That's my favorite part.
Can we introduce our third guest here?
Yes, we've got a little yapper.
Yes, this is Yapper Junior Riley Shear. Say hello.
Hi.
He's going to do his very first movie review later on.
That's right.
Our guest children's film critic for the day,
and also a model, and now he's going to be a movie critic, adding that to his resume. So. Yeah, if you go to thefilmyap.com, you can see a picture of him modeling the Film Yap t-shirt.
He's a VIP at the Film Yap. Yeah. Awesome.
Film Yap, the next generation.
Yeah. And so even though Matthew isn't here today, he's going to be here in spirit because he has an interview that he's going to have played.
Yes. This is Matthew's third chat with Chef Robert Irvine.
And joining me on Film Sociology is a man who knows what food goes with a vodka martini shaken, not stirred, the host and star of Restaurant Impossible on the Food Network, and chef extraordinaire, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, sir?
I am wonderful. Thanks for inviting me to talk about movies.
And among other things, this is you're in the guest hall of fame now. This is the third time, so it's a charm.
Well, I love it. You do such great work with them movies. And you know what's really good, Matt? You keep sending me the things to watch, which I love.
Yes, because you ask me to, as opposed to stalking emails.
No, absolutely. I want you to, because the amount of time I get off, which is not very much, I like to follow your suggestions, so it's good. So keep sending them, please.
My pleasure. And I keep trying to jot down notes when you're in the kitchen as well, so I'm slightly getting better. Now, for those who don't know, with Restaurant Impossible, Robert has 2 days and $10,000 to save a restaurant that is in all sorts of peril. And this is the second season for it. And now, on Wednesday at 10 o'clock on Food Network, you can see a restaurant in Indianapolis with Robert coming to the rescue. So, Robert, tell us a little bit about the Snooty Fox.
Well, the Snooty Fox was such an amazing place, but it was so outdated and based on an English pub, actually. The owner had actually been to this pub and thought it was a really neat place and wanted to recreate it, actually, in Indianapolis. And he did, but obviously 20 years of time has taken its toll on the place. So time, economy, it's stuck back there in some sort of semi-type mall. And wasn't getting much or great reviews. So, they went through a very, very tough time, financial time. And, there's one thing that I love to do, and that's help people. And we went in there, did an amazing job in there, I thought. And I think that if you visit it, you will love it.
I was curious how many restaurants have pitched you their issues over the time with the series, and what made the pitch for the Snooty Fox stand out?
Well, we have over 700 to 1,000 applicants for us to go in and help the restaurants. And, I have no interest in doing that process. But what happens, people go into their restaurant pre-show. They look at their books. They talk to the owners. They find out what's going on in their life. And then they decide yes or no which one it's going to be. I really don't want to know the story until they get there. because that, therefore, is the first time for me to understand these woes that people are having and their family and everything else. So it's more realistic for me to really understand them when I get there.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know with the Snooty Fox, you mentioned it was going for an English pub feel. I would say, has the look from an English pub obviously changed over the years? I think you said the Snooty Fox hasn't changed in some 20, 30 years. I was wondering, what has changed over the years as far as English pub, whether it be food and decor or both?
Well, I think more the food. The decor, I mean, obviously it's got a little brighter. There's not so many stuffed animals anymore, but, you know, like the olden days. But the food has gone into a new era of more fine foods, more gastro-type pubbish. So whereas before they used to be heavy, staunchy, you know, roast beef dinners, steak and kidney pies, you know, type of thing. And I think they've gone a lot finer with food now.
My wife would say there's more to life than beige food.
Yes.
Well, I was saying, people can check it out on Wednesday on the Food Network, but you did a heck of a job. I was wondering, how long were you in Indianapolis from start to finish?
Well, literally, we flew in the evening before we shot the show. We started the show at 7 in the morning, sometimes 6, and I left straight after that show ended 2 days later, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get much time to spend anywhere. And we literally just finished one last night in Florida at 1 o'clock in the morning, and actually a little bit before that, but arrived in Atlantic City at 10:20 this morning.
Good. Thank goodness for planes.
Yes, yes.
So
commercial planes, I might add.
Yes. Now, when it was with this restaurant, I know from watching the show, sometimes it's the food, sometimes it's the decor, sometimes it's the staff, and sometimes it's all, you know, a combination of. Where did the Snooty Fox rank when in the before process?
Oh, I would say in the before process, on a level of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, I would say not from a dirty standpoint, but the Snooty Fox kitchen had its issues, that's for sure. I would say on a 1 to 10, I would say an 8.
And how was it working with the staff?
You know, I love working with people. But you know as well as I do, Matt, when you walk in and tell people they're doing something wrong after 25 years, their initial reaction is to put up a front and fight against you, even though you're there to help them. You know, the questions I ask are tough questions. And, you know, unless I ask them questions, I don't know what's going on with the restaurant, with the owners, with the staff, et cetera, et cetera. And when you start delving into them questions, that's when it starts to get a little ugly.
Well, I would think last week's show is one for the highlights with the retired Marine who we find out lost his taste buds and a sense of smell. That was just one of the biggest reactions I've ever seen from you.
Yes. You know, the interesting part about that, I had a tweet yesterday. Somebody said, oh, you were very mellow on this show. I was very respectful,
yeah,
I would like to say, because Eric was the first commanding officer of the U.S. Marine Corps into Iraq during the Desert Storm in the Armored Division. So, you know, I'm a military guy, you know, Matt, and I respect every person in uniform, whether it be a fireman, a policeman. Definitely are members of the armed service, men and women. So, yes, I was very respectful. Didn't realize that he didn't run his business like he run his commands, that's for sure. And if he had.
Joining me on Film Sociology is a man who I think holds the record for most appearances on the show, and he's not even family, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you, Matt? Great to talk to you again.
Good to have you here. Before we talk about Next Iron Chef, there has been an update here in Indianapolis, but a week and a half ago, the Snooty Fox restaurant closed its doors. And I know,
the first one, you know. Unfortunately, and you know yourself in business, we can only do so much. And I don't think it was the business itself. I think the guy is selling the whole plaza or whatever that is in there. So, unfortunately, I'm very saddened by that because I really like that place. And as you know, you were there at the opening, so
mm-hmm.
Or the relaunch, I should say. And it's sad. I never want to see anybody go out of business, but the reality is you can only do so much, and then it's up to the people, you know?
Right. I mean, my question was going to be, was this the first? And you know, you have 2 days up against 29 years and everything else that happened before it, so, you know.
Yeah, I read the article in the newspaper, and he said, you know, economic times and bad management, and, you know, it's always sad.
Yeah.
But it is the first one. And I'm sure there'll be a couple more. But, you know, if people listen and take steps early enough, these things wouldn't happen.
Right, and long before you ever show up.
Yeah, we you know, you're right, 2 days as opposed to 29 years. We can do miracles, but sometimes miracles, in this particular case, weren't good enough.
Well, when you can walk on grease, let me know. I'd say walk on water, but people will be mad at me.
Yeah, well, I'm never going to be able to do that, but at least we give it a good try, right?
There you go. All right, we move on now to next Iron Chef. It's funny, you and I have talked before about you wanting to be in an action film. The promos for this looks like the cooking version of The Expendables, only younger and slightly better looking.
Yes, we did talk about me doing a movie, and Iron Chef is definitely, or the next Iron Chef is not a movie. But it's got as much action and drama in it as a movie, I believe, and I think it's going to be a great season. You know, eight chefs all trying for this title, and it's just very cool because we're all friends, except when we start the competition, you see that friendship distance itself from the competition. It's kind of interesting.
Well, it's funny. It's, of course, when I was looking at the pack of competitors, and it seems like you would have an advantage because, well, you do challenges in different locations all the time.
Yes, you would think that. But the way the challenges are set up, and you'll see that in the first episode, they're very, very different. They've never done any show like this before. You don't only do the challenge as an individual or a group, whatever the challenge is, but you also have, straight after that, an immediate cook-off, the bottom two.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So there's a lot of pressure to produce. And, you know, and I've said this 1,000 times, one man's meat's another man's poison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like wine. I believe in certain things that I do in my food are what I do, and so does everybody else. And we just hope that the judges like what we do.
Right.
And, you know, and that's how competition works.
And you know these judges. We've seen them before as well.
Well, we've seen Simon Majumdar. We've seen Michael Simon, a great friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Judy Judah. It's the first time I've actually met her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a new person to me. But everybody else in the cast, yes. You know, Anne Burrell, my arch nemesis. yeah. Not really. We're good friends.
No, but, I would say, which one of you is Man United and which one's Leeds United?
I think I'm Man United and she's Leeds. She's the thug. That's her. And she's in Lisbon now on a cruise ship having fun while I'm in New York City shooting stuff. So who's the winner there, I might add. I think she is. So, yeah, Marcus Samuelson, Chuck Hughes, Jeffrey Zakarian, Bo McMillan, you know, some great people, Elizabeth Faulkner. It's exciting. It's been an exciting ride.
Now, I know you can't tell us a whole lot about it, but can you tell us locations, possibly, or challenges?
I can tell you the first challenge is around a lake called Lake Irvine. That's all I can tell you.
Did you buy your own lake?
I didn't know it was that when we got there.
You better check the rights on that.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind being the Irvine family of California. They've got all the dough, apparently.
Well, don't worry. I tried suing every college that taught sociology, and it didn't work.
Well.
Now, also, and we'll be chatting a little more when it gets a little closer, but you are going to be performing, or I should say you should be on stage, at Clues Memorial Hall at Butler University. How often do you get to do cooking demo shows?
I don't get a chance. I mean, I just did 4 days in Disney that I do every year because I just love it. My children love Disney, and I don't get a chance to do these stuff planned. I've got another great chef, Jonathan Sawyer, coming up with me, and from Cleveland. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime sort of opportunity for those people that want to come say hi, grab pictures and autographs and some stuff, and just have a fun night. So push that as hard as you can push it. We'd love to see everybody there.
Of course. And, of course, you'll have a 9-year-old working security.
Absolutely. My little Emma.
All right.
Your Emma, but my Emma.
No, yeah, we got the possession thing. No, it's absolutely right. You're her guy, so.
I'm an adopted dad.
Yes.
Or brother. Adopted brother sounds better.
Yeah, because my two dads was a sitcom that already happened.
There you go.
We got to work on that. All right, so we move on to, it's Halloween's coming up. Are you a scary movie guy at all?
You know what? I am not. I am a big sissy where that's concerned. I get scared too quick. I'm more of the, you know, I like the action-packed stuff. I like the chick flick type things. I like good heart stories. And I just heard about this movie called Courageous.
Yes, The Firefighters.
And everybody keeps saying to me, oh, you've got to watch it, you've got to watch it. So I think I've got to watch it.
That's good. Well, I was doing some research, and I don't know if you remember the video nasty controversy in England back in the early 80s by Mary Whitehouse and her band of Merry Ladies.
I do, yeah.
Now, did you have friends that that grab movies like this? Because it sounds like these are titles you wouldn't have watched back then.
No, not that I recall, but, you know, back in the 80s, it was kind of a weird thing in England, you know, movies and there's a lot going on in the 80s,
okay.
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I was growing up then. I feel like an old man now, but it's interesting to see how that's changed.
Well, you're not that old, but that's quite right. I've seen some of these, and you're not missing a whole heck of a lot, so it's okay. And I had learned Video Nasty from the sitcom The Young Ones. I don't know if you watched that when it came out.
The Young Ones, yeah, they were a funny group, man. You know, Rick and it was almost pathetic comedy because you had to laugh at them being so stupid.
Yes. But that was, I think, we had in MTV back in the 80s, they would show, on Sunday nights, they would show Monty Python, The Young Ones, and then the comic book, or the comic strip. And that was quite impressionable for a young teenage brain.
Well, I remember The Young Ones because, you know, I grew up with them, and totally, that was the thing everybody talked about at school,
mm-hmm.
You know, how these three crazy guys and what they did, and it just, you know, talk about an escape from realism. That was it in the 80s.
Yeah, and it seemed like a good balance of very smart, because there was actually some smart writing in there, and very silly stuff, which I think follows in the traditions of Blackadder and Monty Python. So,
well, Blackadder, Monty Python, you know, and of course, Benny Hill slapstick comedy, really funny. And obviously, I always used to watch Blackadder and Mr. Bean, and because I always thought Mr. Bean looked like my brother, you know, Rowan Atkinson looked like my brother. I still do, by the way. But again, I he's a funny, funny guy. Rowan Atkinson is just, again, silliness, but in a very lighthearted way.
Yeah. You might like his new film. It's a sequel to Johnny English, Johnny English Reloaded. So it's
yes, I've seen the adverts for it, and I would like that because I like that silly sense of humor.
Yeah, it's got the silly stuff and the spy stuff, and it doesn't star Mike Myers, and that's really okay. And I wish my boss looked like Gillian Anderson.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I know. So have you seen anything lately when you haven't been traveling?
You know, the only thing I have seen, and you will laugh at me, was that What's Your Number with Anna Faris in it.
Oh, really? Not a lot of people saw that. Good for you.
I thought it was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought it was, yes, it's a chick flick, but I thought she did an amazing job. And Chris Evans, just a fun, lighthearted movie, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, you need to cleanse.
Gail was with me, so it was kind of funny.
Did she pick or did you pick?
She picked it way, way before, you know, a couple of weeks before we went to see it. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not in the mood for that yet. And we ended up seeing it a couple of weeks later, and it was just side-splitting for me. I thought it was hilarious because it's almost real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you think about, well, you know, how many boyfriends you have, how many girlfriends you have, and, you know, some more than others in her case. But it was funny. Good humor.
Well, and with social networking, as I learned on Facebook, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past keep coming back a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, do you two...
Social network is both good and dangerous.
If you know how to handle it and handle with others. Do you two take turns when it comes to picking out stuff, whether it's at the movies or at home?
Actually, normally Gail asks me what I want to watch, and I'll say, okay, let's get on point. Let's have a look what movies are playing and what sounds good to me. Then I'll read the synopsis of it, and then I'll pick. And occasionally she'll say, oh, I really want to see this one, or, you know, that sort of thing. But we're pretty even.
That's good. That's good. There, I've worked with couples. I call it Dr. Soce Film Therapist. And if one of them picks a bad film, the other says, I want to pick the next two or the next three. I said, was it really that bad?
Well, you're good at sending me movies to watch. So
well, I try. So and you know you got the number. It's like a concierge. So
yeah, I'm an old. Sort of, I love watching the Three Musketeers and things like that. So I think that will be another thing I'll be watching soon.
Yeah, I got to direct the stage version of that last year, and I'm intrigued because I like some of the cast, and I haven't seen anything that tremendous in 3D. So maybe this will be a first for the fall.
Heard a lot about that Real Steel too.
A lot of boxing robots.
Yeah. Did you like it or not so much?
You know, the problem was it reminded me too much of Over the Top, only with a bigger budget and with giant robots. So,
okay.
And I remember seeing Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman did a WWE appearance, and, you know, that crowd ate it up. And the problem was I think I've seen too many boxing movies, so I know all the boxing movie cliches, like the entire crowd that turns around, you know, from one fighter to another and the speeches after a fight.
You know, I did watch The Money Pit.
Uh-oh.
I did watch that, and I got to tell you, I like that, too.
Hopefully that hasn't happened to you.
No. it hasn't, thank goodness, but based on a true story, obviously, and how anybody turns that much money down at that point in your career, I don't know, but I thought it was pretty good.
Excellent. Well, with Halloween coming up, do you dress up? Do you do Halloween, or are you the parent that waves from the end of the driveway?
Well, it's tough for me to do Halloween because I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm home, I mean, last year I dressed up as don't laugh now, Superman, because my kids are not into the horror, scary stuff.
Right,
but. This year I'm on the road, so I won't be doing the Halloween thing. But I love the candies that go along with it.
is there a kryptonite in your workout regimen? Is there a piece of cake?
Yes, there is. Yeah, it's called Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, I noticed you have yours prepared a particular way. Am I right?
I do. Yes. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Everybody knows it's funny. I have I have a quadruple shot of coffee in a grande size cup with four raw sugars at 200 degrees.
Not 195, not 205,
no.
200.
No, I have it at 200 degrees, and it's funny, I'm in New York City. I had a cup of coffee this morning, walked in Starbucks, and they knew exactly what I wanted. And I don't live here.
Well, you're kind of recognizable for that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, it's kind of... a good thing and not so good thing, you know?
Well, it's funny, when you talk about a palate, you often think of taste. I think of taste maybe more in some cases than temperature.
Well, I believe in coffee. Not only do I like hot things hot anyway, but coffee, we roast coffee at 200 degrees because we like that caramelized flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to drink it that hot. Plus, if you put it down, it never goes cold for a while, you know?
That's true. That is true. I used to manage a coffee shop back in the day. So, the cost of a movie rental and a cup of coffee are one and the same in my book.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because I had somebody in Starbucks tell me the other day, oh, we can't do it to 200 degrees. And it happens sometimes. And I said, well, why not? And she said, well, because bacteria grows at 195 degrees. And I just looked at it and I'm like, You need to get out your manual from Starbucks and read it again, because I'm sure it doesn't say that.
Well, some people have been hanging out in Starbucks longer than others.
Yeah.
You probably work in an espresso machine like nobody's business.
Well, you know what? I just got a Starbucks almost franchise in my new restaurant that we're opening up in Hilton Head. Oh, I see, in Bluffton, that will open in December. So we're doing, you know, morning coffee and Danish and all that sort of stuff. So I'm aware of what they do and don't do.
Very good. Cool. Another reason to head south. We'll explore with that.
Yes, we have two. Right now we have one restaurant. December 1, I think we're going to open in the new one, and it's going to be pretty cool. I got Tom working in the restaurant, rebuilding it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my own mini restaurant, Impossible.
Excellent. Can't wait to see it.
Except I'm shouting at myself.
Now, that's a psychological thriller we'll have to film.
Yes.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you when it gets a little closer to your appearance at Butler, but happy Halloween to you and the family.
And to you. Keep plugging that for me, Matt, because I want to sell that place out and have some fun, and then we'll do a little dinner or a couple of beers afterwards, and it'll be a fun time.
Sounds good.
Yay! Another interview. Awesome. Also, we've got Kobe with us today. Hi, Kobe.
Hi, I'm here too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry I didn't introduce you.
Oh, that's quite.
That was my bad.
Nope.
But we're going to talk about movies. We're going to start by talking about Anonymous.
I've got that trailer.
Yes. Okay. This is the latest conspiracy theory about who may have actually penned Shakespeare's plays.
It wasn't Shakespeare.
And it wasn't Shakespeare. Go figure.
That's
Shakespeare is like an idiot in this movie.
That's sacrilege.
Well, then who is it then? Let's find out.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time, writer of 37 plays, 154 sonnets, several epic poems, and why we are here today. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word?
Your poems or your plays will ever carry your name.
Promise me you'll keep our secret safe.
So that was an interesting mix of Shakespeare and Radiohead, which clearly go together. And the theory in this movie is that it was Edward de Vere, Earl of Oxford, who penned the plays. And Chris likes him because he's blonde.
Yep.
He's a blonde hero, and so Chris likes the movie, and that's all there is to it, right?
Yes. Yes. Part of my ongoing whole thing about how blonde guys are biased against the movies, but we won't. Won't tread too much about that again.
Not yet.
Well, it is true, but there are also, all the brunettes seem to be the villains, so I guess that works for this movie. So, this is in the time of Queen Elizabeth I, and you have Vanessa Redgrave playing her, and you have, how do you say his name? Reese Ifans?
I think it's Rice Ifans.
Is
it Reese?
All right. Reese here. He's playing Earl of Oxford. And, there's a lot going on in here in this movie directed by Roland Emmerich, who also did, 2012, Independence Day, Godzilla, Day After Tomorrow. And so continuing the line of disasters, this is what I like to call the tragic disaster. Because everything here is just a tragedy. All the relationships go bum, bum, bum by the end. They're just bleh, all kind of destroyed. But, you know, there are lots of pretty words in the between.
Joe is so taken aback by this commentary.
That's awesome. I'm going to take your recommendation. I have not seen this movie. I'm going to take your recommendation and run with it. If you say see it, I'm going to see it. If you say don't, I'm not.
Well, you know, Shakespeare's good with words. I'm better with vowel noises and bleh.
Yeah, blah is never good, Joe.
I just can't tell.
I have to say that the thing that was most bothersome to me about the film was that there are a lot of different timelines in this movie, and you have different actors playing each of the characters. And so you're spending so much time trying to figure out, okay, which Earl is that, and who's the parents of, and everybody's kind of just confusing, and you spend most of a scene just trying to figure out who someone is, and then once you finally figure it out, we're skipping to a different time. And it just took a lot of work to just try and piece it together. I didn't think it was audience-friendly in that regard.
Yeah, I think you've got an absolutely valid point. There's a lot of characters. It jumps around mainly between two timelines, but there's also some other, you know, the preface to the earlier preface. And there's a lot of characters. I will admit there was even a point where, like, during the whole uprising against Queen Elizabeth, you know, whereas the Earl of Essex and the Earl of Southampton, I think, was the two guys.
Yes.
Earl of Sussex, Essex, something.
Essex and Southampton.
Yes, there you go. Were the ones that were rebelling. And I didn't know which one was which. And that actually kind of became an important point for reasons we cannot reveal here on the air without giving too much away.
Yeah, because they were both sent to go work on some sort of thing in Ireland. And you knew one was being sent and one was following. You didn't know which was which.
Yeah. And they were both blonde guys.
Yeah, and they both had, like, you know, ringlet hair. I mean, the one guy, I swear, the first scene I thought he was a girl because his hair was just so beautiful and full of blonde ringlets and very long.
Was it? Oh, okay. It was ringlet, so it wasn't flowing.
It was all curly and it looked like a doll.
Yeah.
And Chris's hero was often seen in makeup, so if you're a nobleman, you get to wear lots of makeup.
They all wore makeup back then. You know, when Queen Elizabeth died and they were preparing her body, you know, back then they didn't take off the makeup. They just slathered another layer on. So she had like a half an inch of stuff on her face when she died.
Yeah, it does not romanticize the living conditions or anything of that era the getting ready. Everyone's very lined.
But I actually really like this movie a lot. And I think a lot of the reason it doesn't sound like the reason you're down in the movie is because of the whole conspiracy theory that Shakespeare really didn't write his stuff. It was actually a nobleman and not the commoner.
Love conspiracy theories. I just didn't like the way this movie was put together.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talking about that. Newsweek actually even wrote an article calling it the unintentionally hilarious movie anonymous. Basically because, you know, these are all different theories, and there have been many theories. You know, once some that say it was Christopher Marlowe, some that say it was Queen Elizabeth herself that actually wrote them. I think they're all bunk. I mean, you know, there's nothing really to suggest concretely that Shakespeare did not write them himself. But I just look at it as a concept of a stepping off point for a wonderful, fantastic story, much like Shakespeare in Love, a movie that won the Best Picture Oscar for a completely fanciful and untrue story about Shakespeare's life. This is the same thing, except it's a completely fanciful and untrue story about Shakespeare's life in which Shakespeare is a minor character. And I think that's what I liked about the movie is they didn't really harp on the whole conspiracy theory part of it. They just sort of said, in our telling of things, this is the way it is, and you quickly accept it and move on. And I think the fact that they keep Shakespeare as a completely tertiary character in it is their way of underlining that and saying, okay, this movie is not about Shakespeare and Shakespeare's authorship. It's about what if. And so they do that big – I mean, Shakespeare literally, he pops up for a couple minutes every few scenes, and that's all you really see out of him.
Yeah, and on the point of hilarity, in the screening I attended last night, there were about 40 students from IUPUI, like the head reserve seating. They definitely thought it was hilarious. They were laughing in all of the serious scenes, like, uproariously. Well, much so.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't there, because I would have had to come over and give them a smack.
Yeah, it was a little, like, to the point of, okay, what is so funny?
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, I got caught up in the whole, I mean, all of this stuff, the turns of the plot. And late in the movie, as you know, there are many really fantastic turns of the plot and, you know.
Big revelations, one of which I was thought was pretty obvious from the beginning.
Yeah, stuff that is pretty unbelievable. And if you look at, you know, the what historians and literary scholars debate is all pretty far out stuff. But again, for me, I enjoyed the movie because I didn't get into the whole. For me, it was about the what if, not the details of the what if.
And I did not enjoy it as much as you.
It's dumb.
No, he doesn't get tortured, and the beaver's not Jewish. So
okay.
However,
I'll see it anyway.
All right. However,
there we are.
Well, I think Chris's is it's not hella bad, right?
Oh.
Don't you think? Because I think it's dumb.
Where'd it go?
But I think
that.
That's Chris's.
Yeah, it's not hella bad.
See, I'm not opposed to sharing. I'm pretty nice.
Okay.
All right. The next movie we're going to be talking about that came out in theaters today is In Time, starring Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried.
We talked about this before, and I found out somewhere the actual pronunciation of her name is Siegfried.
Siegfried.
Yeah.
Silent.
Not spelled that way.
What? Non-existent G.
Nordic, yeah. Icelandic sort of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, something like
okay,
that.
Okay, Siegfried, a girl with the giant eyes. Yeah. She's in this movie.
Girl
and we have a trailer.
Yes, we do.
Allow me to introduce my mother-in-law, Clara, my wife, Michelle, and my daughter, Sylvia.
Whoa, where's the rest?
Never met the quota.
My units are up from last week.
So is the quota.
Just once, I'd like to wake up with more time on my hand than hours in the day.
How old are you?
28.
I'm 105. The day comes when you've had enough. If you had as much time as I have, what would you do with it?
Sure as hell wouldn't waste it.
The last time anyone saw him alive, there was over a century on that clock.
Well, follow the time.
His name is Will Salas.
You can't hide 100 years in the ghetto.
You know that time will get you killed.
Hey, Mom, I'm gonna get out of here.
I just wouldn't know what to do if I lost you.
I don't believe we've had the pleasure of your company before, Mr. Salas. Will Salas.
I'm sorry to have to break up the party, Mr. Weiss. I just need a word with your friend.
This is my destiny.
Please take me home.
I can't do that.
Why?
You're keeping me alive. How can you live with yourself watching people die right next to you?
You don't watch. You close your eyes.
I'm gonna make them pay. I'm gonna take them for everything they've got.
Come on, help yourselves.
Take the time, it's free.
You put enough time in the wrong hands, you upset the whole system.
Let's hope so. If this works, we gotta get more.
I can help you get all the time you want.
You know we're coming to get you.
Will, look out!
His crime wasn't taking time. He was giving it away.
Okay, today I had the choice of three movies that weren't screened for press, and they were Puss in Boots, The Rum Diary, and In Time. And I chose In Time because I found the premise so intriguing. It didn't matter if the movie was going to be any good. I had to see what they were doing with it and where they were going. And yeah, it's pretty obvious time is money metaphor. And it gets a little hilarious because, you know, you'll go through the line, oh man, a cup of coffee is 4 minutes. And then you think about it, you probably spent 10 minutes waiting for that cup of coffee. So it gets even more expensive the more you add the two together. And this is an interesting society where now we've evolved to the point where we're genetically engineered to age 25. And then you have 1 year on your arm. So do whatever you want with that year, you know, work for more time, steal more time, which can be done through creative arm wrestling. That's how you transfer time. And it's actually just really funny. There's a theme of, you know, people must die so that a few can be immortal. You have the rich elite living in these time zones, which the others cannot access. So most people are stuck in the ghetto and they're fighting each other for time. And you have interesting situations where Justin Timberlake is our main character and our hero. Olivia Wilde plays his mother. There's a cute scene in the beginning where you know that she's short on time. She's only got a couple days left. But still, she's like, here, honey, I want to make sure you have a good lunch today. So here, take 30 minutes. And they switch some time.
That's just... Does it make that noise when they switch time?
Well, it does the time counting down noise. It's you. Oh, okay. Oh. It happened. And as you can hear in the trailer, Justin Timberlake comes into contact with Matt Bomer, who stars in White Collar. And he's an old man now. He's well over 100. He's got a century on his arm. And he just realized that he's mature enough that he doesn't need to live any longer. So he gives away his time freely as a gift. But nobody else knew it was a gift. So before you know it, Justin Timberlake's on the run. And everybody on the ghetto wants his time, including the Minutemen, which are a gang led by... I know, it's literally called Minutemen. Led by Alex Pettifer from I Am Number 4.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, lovely.
And he's also being pursued by the Timekeepers.
No.
Who are the cops, led by Cillian Murphy, who, you know, come back to me when you've been on this job 50 years like I have, which is his cred that he tells everyone.
Does he have any nude scenes?
No. thankfully, no one does.
He didn't break out the 28 Days Later nude scene again.
No, we didn't have to do that at all. But, you know, eventually Justin Timberlake comes up into contact with Amanda Siegfried by, you know, advancing to the highest time zone and gambling for more time. He's got all this time on his arm.
Is that like Mountain Pacific or is that Central?
time jokes galore. There you go.
But it's so funny because you have the rich people being like, We know you're not from here because we saw you running, and nobody needs to run in the rich time zone.
Oh my gosh!
And it turns out that if the poor are recklessly given a bunch of time, like in a Robin Hood style, they spend it standing around and not going to work.
That's my concept.
You have the little rich girl and the Robin Hood character, Bonnie and Clyde-ing it, breaking into time banks, stealing time, redistributing it amongst the ghetto. It's all very dramatic, and it is a little heavy-handed with some of the politics. And so take that what you will. And that's pretty much the movie. And one thing I really don't understand is how Amanda Siegfried spends all this time running in heels. Because there are several times where, you know, they've got less than 30 seconds. They have to run to get time switch time. And I'm like, how are you even moving? You're in heels that are like at least 3 or 4 inches tall.
Well, it seems like they spent a good portion of time running. So, and surely not all the time they've been running has been in this movie. So, they have to have been running before this. So she's probably good at it.
And cars are a luxury.
She's running to get time.
When Justin Timberlake purchases a car, they ask him, okay, we can deliver this for you. Where would you like it to be displayed? And he's like, what? I'm going to drive it. What? People don't take any risky behaviors in the rich time zone. They don't run. They don't drive cars. They just don't want to do anything that would be risky. Like, why would you don't want to die a violent death or an accidental death when you've got all this time? Maybe you've got a million years on your arm.
Let's see. But before we were talking about, I asked, this movie sounds an awful lot like Logan's Run, a cheesy, good sci-fi movie from the 1970s, which you haven't said you hadn't heard of. It's the kind of the same concept. I mean, they're, in that case, I think people, I can't remember if it was 25 or 30 that you die. Although in that case, it was basically they just take you off and shoot you because... They don't want you to live past 30.
Well, here you just have a dramatic, heart attack and you fall over.
Yeah, I saw that in the trailer. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds, as they say, inspired. No, wasn't it the same guy that made the movie Gattaca directed this? Andrew Niccol, I think?
It wouldn't surprise me because as soon as I left the theater, I thought, you know, this reminds me a lot of Gattaca.
Yeah. It sounds like Gattaca mashed up with Logan's Run, which I believe they're actually doing a remake of Logan's Run.
Bryan Singer's been wanting to do that for years.
Really?
So, and you went to the 2 o'clock screening of that in Noblesville, right? So you got here just in time.
I did. And
oh,
you know,
Joe's in on it now.
And you know who I have to thank for that is the Hamilton IMAX for being so awesome. I have to admit, last time I complained about them because the power went out during my film and I ended up being late here. But this time they were pretty amazing. Even though there was huge lines at the concession stand, they gave both me and Dan free drinks for having to wait. Saving me time and money as time. And they always give us the great popcorn deals. They remembered my order. I didn't even have to tell them what I needed. We all know it's a very complicated order.
It's a class act establishment up there.
I have to admit, you should go to the Hamilton IMAX because it's awesome. And that's why I bothered to go there instead of trying to go to a closer theater to WFYI.
Chris, Andrew Niccol, director In Time, Lord of War, Simone and Gattaca.
Wow. Gattaca, you win.
Those are all kind of similar.
Gattaca, really good movie, by the way.
He wrote The Truman Show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Another alternate reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
What do we think about this?
So, it's... you know, there...
Otter, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Good, yeah. Yeah. So, next one, we're going to be turning it over to our guest... children's film correspondent Riley,
yes.
And he's gonna tell us what he thought of Puss in Boots, which I also did really want to see.
Can we start, Riley? Let's talk about what Puss in Boots is about. Who is Puss in Boots?
We're getting there.
Well, was he in a different movie before he was in this one? What movie was he in before? Did you know? No. Whose friend is he? Is he Shrek's friend?
Well, maybe I can set this up a little bit, and then you can tell
ahead.
Me if you like the movie.
Set this up.
Because we know that there have been 4 Shrek movies, and which one did Puss start showing up in? Which one was he in first? Do you remember? Okay, it was the second one. And I have to admit, I love Puss in Boots. He is voiced by Antonio Banderas.
This is I wondered, I didn't recognize it in the trailers, but I'm seeing here now, he is in this one.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because I was afraid, they're going to get somebody else to do it.
Nope, it's still the same.
It's the Desperado reunion with Salma Hayek also.
Oh, nuh-uh.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And the best thing about Puss in Boots is he has giant eyes, and he's so cute.
Yeah. And when he's defeated, he whips out those eyes and makes
you make big eyes, yep. Everyone has to weaken before the big eyes. Mm-hmm. So what did Puss do in this movie? Did you like it?
You're going to talk.
Yes, I did like it.
Oh, good. What did you like
about
it?
He's nodding his head. So what was your favorite part, other than the ending?
Did you like it when he had to fight?
Yes.
Okay. Did you like his scenes with the girl cat? What was her name?
Before everyone starts changing the channel.
All right.
Yeah.
So it was a good movie. You think other kids should go see it?
Yes.
Yeah. What will they like about this movie? Will they like all the talking, or will they like other things?
They would like other things.
Okay, like what?
Is there fencing? Like swordplay? Fighting with swords?
Sword fighting.
Sword fighting.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, who are the people that what is Puss in Boots doing in this movie? I think he's trying to get something. What's he trying to get?
The magic beans.
Okay, and who's got them? If you recall, these are they're all fairy tale characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting magic beans from who? Who's he trying to get magic beans from?
What?
He's got a friend. Who's his friend? Who is Puss in Boots' friend in this movie? He's kind of an egg guy.
Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah.
Oh,
voiced
nice.
By
yeah.
Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis makes it into fairy tale land.
Yeah.
As does Billy Bob Thornton, Selma Hayek, Amy Sedaris, Constance Marie, Guillermo del Toro.
Nice.
Yeah. He's the mustache man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm looking at how much time we have left. And I think we need to move on to what came out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
The video store, quick.
Hang on. Oh, quick. I've got too many folders on this thing.
This time is expensive. Are you sure we should spend the time opening the video store?
Yes.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open a video store.
And that expensive video store is open. So first we're going to talk about Winnie the Pooh came out this week on Blu-ray and DVD. And I finally saw it when we went out of town. I had my copy and I watched it. And the first thing that struck me is, wow, this is so much shorter than other kids' movies these days. And yet filled with so much awesomeness. Yeah. It was so nostalgic. It reminded me of the movies I used to watch as a kid. And I think it was a Saturday morning cartoon, too, because we used to collect the VHS tapes of all the different episodes. And I just found it really enchanting. I thought it was really well done. And even the songs didn't annoy me. Yeah. I thought it was really cute.
And Winnie the Pooh had a faux hawk.
No.
Tigger is now a lion.
A no. lion?
What? No. This. So these are like the regular characters? Like just Winnie the Pooh, they're not dolled up, they're not updated for the new millennium, and
it's the old style animation, man.
Christopher Robin is not a wealthy land developer or anything.
No, he still wears knee socks, one up, one down, and I love how the story continues through the storybook using the letters.
Even the
letters even become props to help them out of certain situations.
That's really what I loved about this movie, is that it was just Winnie the Pooh.
It was classic.
Yeah, and they're not like using cell phones, and they're not, there's no fast talking pop culture references. It's just Winnie the Pooh and all his friends kind of wandering through the woods,
poking fun at themselves.
Yeah. And the whole thing with the Baxen was really fun, and that the Baxen is this monster that Al pretty much invents because Christopher Robin has disappeared. He left a note saying something about the Baxen, he's actually saying back soon. Mm-hmm. And so they, it's all very kiddie stuff, but it's very good. It's clever for as simple as it is.
And watch all the way through the credits, because the credits also have animation and cute little stories going on, and there's a cookie at the end.
Yeah, there's a nice little cookie at the end.
It's classic Pooh.
And I have to say, there were only like two like little kind of modernized things, like Rabbit did a little bit of like ninja stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Piglet did something that was very Indiana Jones in one very short clip, but both of those were very much welcome because it didn't take you out of the element. It was just a fun side thing.
Yeah, it was very subtly done. Rabbit doesn't jump in and like, it's not like Shrek where he's doing the Matrix moves or anything.
Yes.
It's a very quick little thing.
So one of my favorite animated features this year for sure. I have not seen Rango, so right now it's at my top, but I know you've really praised Rango, so I will have to see that at some point.
Yeah. I will have to see the Pooh.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll trade. another one that came out that I think all of us really liked is, Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yeah. Starring the brunette Chris Evans as the blonde Steve Rogers.
Yes.
Why did they do that?
Chris Evans still can't act his way out of a paper bag, but I really like what they did with the character, that they really took their time setting up the character. It wasn't just some guy who gets superpowers and then boom, we're off on the story and fighting bad guys. I mean, it's like a good hour and 10 minutes into the movie until Captain America is fighting Nazis and doing the actual superhero thing. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. And Red Skull, I think, best villain of the summer.
Yeah, he's very good. Although, I think you said in your review he could have been used a little more. than he was. He's kind of dropped in here and there. And
yeah.
Yeah, I would have liked a little more interaction between the two of them, especially. Maybe two or three fight scenes, you know, legitimate fight scenes instead of the little quickie things they had before the end.
I love this movie. It was my favorite superhero movie this year.
Very good.
I really bought into the goodness of Captain
America. Well, you didn't have much to compete with Green Lantern and
Green Lantern, X-Men First Class, and Thor.
Was very good, yeah,
that was
and Thor was pretty good too.
Yeah.
I think there was only one element I didn't like about Thor, and that was the romance. I didn't buy it.
So it was about a third of the movie you did.
Yeah, but that still made it better than Green Lantern.
Yeah, that's true.
Which wasn't too hard. Yeah. A lot of movies were better than Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Also. The Jurassic Park trilogy is finally out on Blu-ray.
Yes.
I will be finding that because that is awesome. Also, America, the Story of Us, that miniseries, is releasing a giant gift set.
Starring Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
No? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But it is narrated by Liev Schreiber.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Names are evading me today. but yeah, it has like a 400-page booklet, and it's just beautiful footage.
That's beyond a booklet. That's a book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When it's 400
pages. I think it's called a tome when it's that big.
A novel? It's pretty good. Also, a movie I didn't see, A Little Help with Jenna Fisher.
We saw this. Chris and I saw this last year at the Indianapolis International Film Festival.
Yeah, it actually won the top prize, best film of last year's IIFF.
Mm-hmm.
A Little Help. And managed to get actually a little bit of a theatrical release almost a year later.
Yeah.
And it's just a tiny little indie starring Jenna Fisher, some really nice performances in it. And it's kind of one of those movies you're not quite sure, is this a dark comedy, is this a drama? Watch and find out.
Yeah, it's fun. Chris O'Donnell's also in it.
Briefly.
Yeah, for just a few minutes.
All right. The only other thing I had on my list was... Pawn Stars Volume 3, coming to a review soon at hauntedflowerreviews.com.
Excellent.
Really?
It's guilty pleasure of mine. I love it when they send me that one. It is so much fun to watch.
My wife actually watches that show, and thus, by osmosis, I have to watch at least a little bit of that show.
But don't you learn something? You learn about history and value of stuff.
I learn about obese men who sit behind desks and try and
knocking Chum Lee?
Well, I mean, the entire show is like, you know, they're like, here's this fantastic item, I'll give you $14 for it. I want a 400, I'll give you $16. Okay,
but wait, no, but see, before you get to that, they have to call one of these guys that they know, because they know so many guys that know everything about whatever it is people are bringing in.
And some of those guys get their own shows now. Rick, who does the restorations, has a restoration show now.
What?
They offered to send that to me. I didn't pick up on that because I like more the other portion of the show.
Yeah, there's kind of a whole panoply of these shows. Like that American Pickers.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm reviewing that too.
I think that's also coming out this week. Last week's.
Yes. I just finished watching it. And that one's a little bit more puzzling to me because I'm like, how the heck is that worth that?
Yeah.
All right. Are we out of time?
Are we off the air?
Is that it?
Plug your sites. Do your stuff.
HauntedFlower.com, HauntedFlowerReviews.com, IndieMojo.com.
TheFilmYap.com.
Also TheFilmYap.com.
TheFilmYap.com.
Thank you, Chris, Joe, Riley. Thanks for coming. Thanks, Matthew, for having me again. Thanks, Kobe.
Yep.
The end.
All right. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 HD2 The Point, Indianapolis. We go!